Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday. Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government will be here with an update from Monticello and what's going on with the county legislature. Plus, we'll hear from Mayor Derek Williams, mayor of Honesdale, who's come over here to say hello and tell us what's going on in Honesdale and how he came to discover Radio Catskill as part of our spring fun drive. Plus, culture reporter Valerie Manzi has an update on River Reps Gala this weekend. And we'll check in Albany. The budget's over 10 days late. What's going on and who's opposing what? Our spring fund drive is 37% toward the goal. Donate now, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. The news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. Vice President Harris is flying to Arizona today. She'll attend an abortion rights rally in Tucson. This comes the same week that the Arizona Supreme Court ruled that an 1864 law banning nearly all abortions in the state can take effect. Activists say they're working to place the question of abortion rights on the Arizona ballot this fall. Although the Catholic Church officially opposes abortion, a new poll shows there is far greater diversity of opinion among laity in the U.S. NPR's Jason DeRose reports the finding is part of a new Pew Research study.
6 in 10 Catholics believe abortion should be legal in all or most cases. Catholic opinion about abortion rights tends to align with political leanings, fewer Catholic Republicans favoring legal abortion than Catholic Democrats. Pew Research says Hispanic Catholics, who make up one-third of the U.S. Church, are slightly more in favor of legal abortion than white Catholics. Among Pew's other findings, today about 20% of the U.S. population identifies as Catholic, but only 3 in 10 say they attend Mass regularly. And Pope Francis remains popular, with 75% of Catholics rating him favorably, although that's down from a high of 90%. Jason DeRose, NPR News.
Members of the U.S. House are reviewing a section of the Communications Decency Act. It shields tech companies from liability for content posted on their platforms by a third party. Section 230 was created to protect free speech, but from member station KQED, Rachel Miro reports, critics say it is being abused.
Back in 1996, lawmakers feared killing the internet in its cradle unless they carved out some form of immunity in return for content moderation. But Professor Marianne Franks of George Washington Law School says Section 230 has become a legal shield for social media platforms.
For a vast array of harms, including life-destroying harassment, sexual exploitation, deadly misinformation, and violent radicalization.
28 years after Section 230 was created, it's become the focus of bipartisan tirades in Congress. But those frustrations have yet to result in new laws. For NPR News, I'm Rachel Miro.
California is again seeking a disaster declaration for the state's salmon fishery. NPR's Nathan Rott reports on efforts to save California's dwindling salmon population.
A disaster declaration would help support fishing communities along California's coast. Commercial and recreational fishing provide tens of thousands of jobs, and the industry is still reeling from last year's closure. High temperatures and lower water levels in rivers, partially because of water diversions for agriculture, have been hurting the state's already diminished salmon populations. Many in the fishing industry support the decision to close the fishery, but are urging the state to take more actions to help the species recover. Nathan Rott, NPR News.
This is NPR. The National Weather Service says there are flash flood and wind warnings up for parts of New Hampshire and Vermont. Melting snow is filling rivers and streams that are rising rapidly. Vermont was hit twice last year by flooding, once in December and last July. Thousands of Vermonters were flooded out of their homes and businesses. A jukebox musical featuring the music of 80s hitmaker Huey Lewis is previewing on Broadway, with plans for a formal opening later this month. Jeff London reports from New York the singer-songwriter can barely hear any of the production because of a condition that has made him progressively deaf.
You can hear this Huey Lewis hit in two Broadway shows right now.
That's the power of love.
It's in the stage adaptation of Back to the Future and In the Heart of Rock and Roll, a new musical which features songs from Huey Lewis's catalog, including a new tune he wrote for it. But Lewis has Meniere's disease, a progressive condition that has left him unable to hear or play music. Lewis went public with the diagnosis in 2020, and after suffering from a period of depression, he's thrown himself into the creation of this new musical, which weaves many of his hit songs into a new story. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
The former interpreter for Los Angeles Dodgers star Shohei Ohtani will be in federal court today in Los Angeles. Ipe Mizuhara is accused of stealing $16 million from Ohtani's bank account to cover gambling debts. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Listeners like you who donate during our spring fun drive, Radio Catskill, we're in the drive right now, and I got to turn down that music. 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. You're listening to Radio Catskill, and as part of our spring fun drive, we've been inviting various folks that we know and support us and are members of our community, and one of those folks that's here today, Mr. Mayor, Mayor Derek Williams of Honesdale. Hi, how
hey,
are
Tim.
You?
Doing great. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. You know, you kind of have been known as the walking mayor, walking around town.
That's right.
You didn't walk here from Honesdale to Liberty. Thank you, in the rain.
I had to break my own code today to come visit. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being here, and thank you for, you know, supporting public radio. We've been asking folks, you know, why they support public radio and also how you first discovered Radio Catskill. Wanted you to share that with some of our listeners here?
Yeah, sure. I was thinking about this last night, and I think my introduction was probably back in my high school to college days, where I was cat sitting for an aunt and uncle. They lived just north of Honesdale up in the hills of Bethany. So they get different reception up there. And I went into the garage where the cat was, flicked on the lights. Everything was connected. So the radio came right on. And I got jumped right into like a Grateful Dead jam. And I thought, oh, this is awesome. Because that was kind of my vibe I was exploring at the time. And I never heard it on the radio before. So that was my intro, I think.
Very cool. And then you continue to listen. And what is it that you value about having a public radio station in our area here in Northeast Pennsylvania in the Catskills?
Yeah, you know, I think it's that local connection to the community we were just talking about before we went on air. You know, you have the opportunity to hear stories right from people in the neighborhood, and they can call in and tell you what's going on. The ability to tell those stories and not be so pressured by, you know, the consumer culture that we normally engage in.
Well, we don't have, you know, we're not owned by a corporation. We are here to serve the public, and those folks own us, basically, in a way, right? I mean, yeah. The listeners are, we're here to support the listeners and everybody in the community. So it's I keep saying it, the public in public radio. You are, like I said, you're known as the walking mayor. You were voted into office in January 2022 after your walking for mayor campaign was very successful, walking around on foot. And we were talking about this, how you do interact with the different people in the community and how satisfying it is to hear from folks in the community. Tell us about, you know, that experience for you in Honesdale as the mayor of Honesdale.
Sure. Yeah. It's kind of the best part of the job, you know, just walking around every day, seeing folks and learning what's going on in their individual little neighborhoods. The nice thing about that is you have, you know, as someone who lives and works and plays in town, it's easy to take for granted all the things that are going on. You walk by the same places each day, and you see the same kind of sights on your way to work. Yet when you talk to somebody and you take a few minutes to hear what's happening in their individual lives, it could take you in a far-flung direction of anything you thought about before. And in that moment, your kind of universe of Honesdale really expands out to something way bigger than you thought it was. So the stories I'm able to hear from folks and the concerns that they share and the ways that I can try to help them address those concerns are the best parts of the job.
Yeah. You know, Honesdale's changed since you have come into office, thanks to some of the things that you've helped to do in the borough. But how have you seen it change? What are some of the things that you've seen the positive changes there?
You know, one of them in kind of recent memory was having WJFF open up a satellite station above the Coopers. That was a wonderful thing. What we've been running through now is a bit of like activated progress built up over the years is that we're working on redesigning our main street with a new streetscapes redesign plan. And that is something that's been worked on and planned for you know, over a decade now since we went to a one-way street pattern downtown.
Right.
And we had a revitalization plan and that identified the streetscapes. And now we just had a really great moment the other week where we got $450,000 to start building out this new redesign, which is going to make it way safer for people to walk around town and safer for driving too.
What are some of the aspects of this new safer design?
So a key element of it, especially one that's near and dear to my heart, is something called traffic calming. So that's a concept where right now, if a lot of what we experience on the street is kind of given to us by the design itself, you know, so if you come across a two lane going in one direction scenario and there's no brakes, it kind of feels like a highway, and a highway isn't what we want in our downtown. So with this redesign, we'll have things like bump outs, which could extend the sidewalk and the crosswalk out a little bit further beyond that parked car that's usually sitting right upstream of you. And that's going to increase the sight lines and make things way safer. But we're also going to have some really nice beautification elements like new benches and places to be and share public space together.
I remember when the direction of Main Street changed, and it was sort of took a minute for people to understand it and get used to it. I will say people, to me it seems, are used to it. You would know a bit better than me. But when I go over to our studio at the Cooperage, or I go into Honesdale for an errand or something, get my hair cut at Mick's. Hi, Mick. I noticed that people tend to slow down on that Main Street. They take the speed limit and the pedestrian traffic seriously, and are, you know, mindful of all that. It's not like a racetrack. I'm sure there are some people that go a little faster than they should, but it seems for the most part people are aware of that. So these new improvements will help just reinforce that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We've got a lot of good momentum going to make Honesdale, you know, celebrated as the place that it deserves to be, and I think these will help us with that.
All right, that's cool. You have a regular meeting coming up on the 22nd, I think. Monthly meeting.
Yep.
And folks can get information about that at the borough website.
Yeah, HonesdaleBorough.com. You can tune into those meetings virtually, or we'd always love to have you in person too. Some people bring popcorn and stuff. It's a real hoot.
I love a meeting where they're bringing popcorn. That's great. We should suggest that to Dan Hoost is coming up next for the Sullivan County Legislature. or the Albany folks. We're going to have a report from Albany about the budget there. Well, again, Mayor Derek Williams from Honesdale, the borough of Honesdale. His website is walkingformayor.com, and get information about what you're up to and talk to you directly there, or just see you out on the street.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm very easy to find.
Thanks for coming in. Thanks for supporting public radio. Thanks for supporting the station, and going to sit for those cats. That's how you discovered it.
Yeah. Very welcome, Tim. Good to see you again.
All right. If you want to call, I think Mayor Derek's going to hang around for a little bit, and he'd be happy to take your donation, 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Now, in Albany, the budget is now over 10 days late. One of the items holding up a deal is a housing package that would build new affordable housing and strengthen tenant protections. Minority Republicans in the New York State Legislature are asserting their opposition to the proposed tenant protections as lawmakers continue to negotiate. From the New York Public News Network, WAMC's Lucas Willard reports.
State Senate Minority Leader Rob Ort gathered with members of both chambers this week to oppose what's referred to as good cause eviction.
Good cause is nothing more than a direct attack on private property rights in this state. And that is the case because some of my colleagues simply do not believe in private property rights.
The Republicans' press conference at the state capitol was organized as good cause eviction is being discussed as part of a larger housing package in the budget. The availability and affordability of a place to live in New York has been a top priority of lawmakers and Governor Kathy Hochul, who could not come to full agreement on a housing plan last year. Good cause requires landlords to provide grounds for a tenant's eviction and adds protections against steep rent hikes. Advocates say there is no greater time for the legislation than now, in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic, when emergency eviction protections expired. But even before the pandemic, the legislation says in 2019, 92,000 people in New York were homeless and 100 families were evicted every day. Daniel Atona of advocacy group For the Many rallied alongside lawmakers during a recent press conference on regulating short-term rentals. He says good cause eviction is one key piece of a housing package puzzle.
At For the Many, we believe in good cause eviction, tenant protections, and green social housing. But we also believe that there is no single fix for our complex housing crisis.
The good cause eviction bill does not apply to landlords with less than 4 units. Still, upstate Republicans dismiss the legislation as a New York City issue. Again, Ort.
Good cause is a New York City creation. There is no one outside of that that would have ever come up, or this would never gain any real traction.
Our residents do sometimes need additional regulations to be able to help support them, especially for so that they're not taken advantage of.
Steve Noble is the Democratic mayor of Kingston. The Ulster County City has instituted its own short-term rental regulations and recently had its own rent control regulations under the state's Emergency Tenant Protections Act upheld in appellate court. Noble says he wants statewide tenant protections and incentives for communities to build all kinds of housing.
And so we've been a big supporter of good cause eviction. We think that it should be really clear on what are the reasons that people can be evicted and what are the reasons that they shouldn't be evicted.
The good cause eviction proposal says annual rent hikes of greater than 3% or 1.5 times the annual percentage change in the consumer price index are presumed to be unreasonable. But not all Democrats are completely on board with good cause. Assemblymember Pat Fahey of Albany says good cause eviction has become a pretty loaded term.
I think we have to address tenant protections and tenant needs, especially among the low income, one with more housing vouchers, just to make it more affordable for those low income. We need some protections in terms of counsel, a right to counsel and housing court, things of that nature. We need to look at how to minimize rent increases. Because we have seen gouging in certain high rent areas. So there are some, but I think there are other parts of good cause. Tying something to the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is just going to, if not done, it can have a chilling effect on growing housing.
Republican Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh of Ballston in Saratoga County says she likes the idea of compromise, but does not believe good cause is a good idea.
When you take something that started at a 3% and you say, well, we're compromising now. Now it's going to be 10% or 5% plus CPI or whatever the proposal is right now, as near as we can figure it out as it's being reported. I don't support it because I think fundamentally it's just a bad idea.
In 2021, the city of Albany became the first in the state to implement its own good cause eviction law before it was struck down. An appellate court sided with landlords in a 2023 decision, saying it conflicted with state law. For WAMC News, I'm Lucas Willard.
And the state Senate approved an April 15th extension for the budget. The assembly is expected to do so today as the negotiations continue with the New York State budget. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get the news out of our local Sullivan County legislature from Dan Hoost, Communications Director. This is Radio Chatsco.
It can be hard to let your mind wander sometimes, to learn about something new, or to get fully engrossed in somebody else's story. That's where NPR comes in.
It takes a long time to create a fairy tale.
He was both a Jesuit priest and a jazz manager.
As soon as I saw the subject, I thought, oh my God, this is it.
Invest in deep, human storytelling today by giving to this station.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Or you can call us at 845-482-4141. Mayor Derek from Honesdale is hanging around a little bit, and our culture reporter Valerie Manzi is here as well to take your donation during our spring fund drive. If someone wants to sign up as a new sound supporter, we have a thank you for doing that this morning. If you sign up as a sound supporter at $10 or more a month, we'll give you 2 tickets to Beautiful, the Carol King musical. That's at the Forestburg Playhouse this summer, July 30th through August 11th. If you're already a sound supporter, if you increase it by $5 a month or more, you're also could grab those tickets. So if you sign up for a new sound supporter, do that now. That's our sustaining membership program. Do it now at 845-482-4141, or you can do it at WJFFradio.org. 2 tickets to see Beautiful, the Carol King musical at the Forestburg Playhouse. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Every Friday, we hear from Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government. He is joining us now. He's on the phone. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Oh, good. Thank you. And want to get to some of the news out of Monticello. Wanted to talk about what happened on Tuesday. And we talked about this before, that the Head Start program here has reopened. Can you tell folks what's happened? Remember that we remember that it shut down in February, and then there was an interim kind of agency that's coming, but now they've opened back up.
Yes. As of yesterday, they fully opened back up to, I think they have about 150 children there right now. So it's not the full amount that they had had before, but some families made alternate arrangements. This interim company called CDI is also operating within certain budget constraints. They're trying, for example, to bring back transportation where they have buses that they can bring in the children with. But at this point, that's not offered. What is, though, being offered is the preschool, the meals, the education, the administration, the taking care of the buildings. They, as you had said, are interim, but we need to make sure that this program continues in some form and that the buildings are maintained so that when a permanent operator comes along, that could be in several months, could be a year, that they'll be able to hit the ground running and serve even more children. It was crucially important to the Sullivan County Legislature and to other county, state, and federal officials that this program get back up and running as soon as possible, because we have a lot of children in need. We have a lot of families that depend on this program. We have staff, employees at the Head Start who depend upon this program. I should point out the county does not have direct oversight or involvement in Head Start, even though it's called Sullivan County Head Start. The county has been assisting and supporting where it can, mostly dealing directly with the families and the staff that were displaced by this abrupt closure. Mm-hmm. CDI, the interim company that's running it, operates under the authority of the federal government, the federal Head Start program. That's where they get the funding from. And so they're keeping us informed now. I think we've improved our lines of communication just this week. And I myself and the county manager, Josh Bukosik, are paying very close attention to how things are going. We also have our Commissioner of Community Resources, Laura Quigley, our District 3 legislator, Brian McPhillips, and our Sullivan County Child Care Council Executive Director, Donna Willey, now sitting on the board of the former Sullivan County Head Start Incorporated. This was the agency that ran it and then had the abrupt closure. They no longer have the contract, but I know that they're trying to regroup and be able to competitively apply for the contract in the future from the federal government. And it may be competitive. There may be more than one agency applying for that. So, but for right now, the legislature wants to make sure that there's some guiding hand on that organization, which still exists as a nonprofit, even though it doesn't actually have anything to do with the current Head Start program.
Yeah, it's now called the CDI Head Start, serving Woodburn and Monticello. You mentioned the grant application process for a permanent provider. Would the county be an applicant for that position?
No. No, I don't anticipate. It's a possibility, but I think it's fairly improbable. I don't think the county is looking to get into that business. There are agencies around that do this kind of work and I think would be interested. We expect there'll be more than one applicant when the federal government opens up the application process. And when that comes to pass, I'll be having more to share with the public about who those applicants are and, of course, who ultimately wins that permanent operator status. Mm-hmm. And because that'll be crucially important to the families and the staff in Sullivan County. I can't stress mm-hmm. how important this service is. Mm-hmm. It serves some of our neediest, most vulnerable children and families, provides employment for dozens of people in the area. So it's, like I said, critically important to the county legislature that this program continues to operate.
Yeah, Brian McPhillips, who is the Sullivan County legislator and who also serves on the Head Start board, told Spectrum News that the county might be an applicant in the future.
It's a possibility, and he's thinking about that, but he hasn't talked to the other legislators about that yet. So, you know, it's something that I Just from my vantage point, I'm not exactly sure that they would look to do that. But we are so far out from that right now. That's months down the road. It may be that I'm talking months down the road about saying, hey, they are actually going to apply.
Yeah.
But I will say this. The legislature has a very, very great interest in making sure the program operates. So if in the end it became evident that the county needed to make an application and run that program, I could see legislators doing that.
Yeah, and the way this closed down so suddenly, and I think we still don't know exactly why this happened, and I'm sure there's an investigation going on, but that seems to have maybe unsettled a few parents. Have you heard from any of the parents who are either coming back or not coming back to Head Start?
Yeah, we've heard from both sides, folks who are back and are very happy, folks who are still working to get back and are not necessarily the happiest and are confused, and then other folks who just sort of sadly said, we've got to find something else. We can't wait for everything to get back on its feet. So, even though the county is not, like I said, involved in direct oversight, what we want to be is a resource, a communications resource for people. So if anyone who is listening knows somebody out there who has a concern or a question about Head Start, talk to your legislator. They're going to be collecting this information. They're going to then relay it to me and to our county manager. And we now have the direct connections, those communication conduits that are so important in this, to the folks in Washington who actually run the federal Head Start program. And they have made themselves available to us to make sure that those questions and concerns get answered. I can't always promise a happy answer, but I am definitely going to work to find out all the answers we possibly can so that we're not, as we were in the past few months, sort of floundering around trying to figure out what's really going on.
The U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, announced over $8 million in loans for two Sullivan County HUD-assisted properties this week. Tell us about that and how that's going to help the housing situation, the housing crisis in our area.
Yes, this is a program HUD does. They actually make these as loans, and it's going to Conifer Realty, which is a Rochester-based company that has two fairly significant housing developments for seniors and affordable housing in Sullivan County. One is Barkley Gardens Apartments in Liberty. I call it the high rise in Liberty because I think it might actually be the tallest building there. I think it's about 5 stories tall. So for those of you listening from New York City, that's not a high rise. Yeah, but for around here, it's on North Main Street. And then there is Lakeview Apartments, which is a complex over in Loch Sheldrake. Actually, during the press conference they had on Tuesday, our District 8 legislator Amanda Ward said she remembered playing with kids growing up in that area at Lakeview Apartments, and just what a nice, close-knit community it is. Conifer seems to be a really great company. I've met several of their principals. They're very interested in making sure that the people who rent and lease properties from them have a good experience, and this is testament to it. It's not adding any housing. We're still, I told the HUD folks, please come back and tell us when you are going to help us add some housing to ease this crisis, but it is upgrading the properties to be more energy efficient, to be more comfortable, to be more livable. Both of these properties are decades old, and I think Conifer has kept good care of them, but they haven't had this kind of significant infrastructure upgrades in a long time. So this is going to make these properties ever more attractive and beneficial to the residents who live there.
Sullivan County Legislature Amanda Ward said that funding is personal to her. She was born and raised here, played with her friends at Lakeview, so it really is will have an impact on the community.
Absolutely, and we're thrilled of any investment in housing. But as I said, I told HUD, I said, let's work together on getting more housing units in Sullivan County because that's what we really need. I spoke on behalf of the chair, Nadia Reich, and said, we have led the area, the state actually, in job growth for 2.5 years, sometimes at the number one spot on a per capita basis. Well, we have people moving here to take jobs, but that can only be sustained for so long if housing is limited and people can't find a place to live.
Mm-hmm. More news from Monticello, the county first in the state to implement a new cybersecurity collaboration. What's that all about?
Yeah, this is really interesting. I had sort of a just a little understanding of what was going on with this, I didn't realize how significant this was. We are the first county in New York State to go live with the New York State Security Operations Center. This is a highly secure facility down in Brooklyn, to the point, actually, I don't know that any photos exist inside or outside of this place, that is designed to basically be our primary cyber defense. You would be astonished to hear this. I certainly was. Sullivan County alone faces a billion, that's a B for a billion, cyber events every month. That's 12 billion events a year. Now, I would call them cyber attacks. There might be more than that, just probes where they're not necessarily trying to attack, just trying to probe our weaknesses, our cyber defenses. But there is definitely a cyber war going on out there. And there have been counties in New York State, Suffolk County being, I think, the most recent example, that suffered basically complete meltdowns of their computer infrastructure and the release of personally identifiable sensitive information out into the black market, if you will, because their cyber defenses weren't where they need to be. Well, I'm proud to say that our Information Technology Services Division, which is led by our Chief Information Officer, Lorne Green, has always been, as long as I've known him, very focused on cybersecurity, making sure that the information we collect is kept safe and that our computer infrastructure, which basically we all depend upon that to operate 24/7, 365, is doing what it should be doing and is kept protected from folks, whether they're just, you know, young hackers in training or they're actually state agents or espionage folks or whatever. I know I'm making it sound very James Bondish, but it is. We want to be protected from those folks who are trying to breach our security and mess with our computer system. So it's actually a great accomplishment. Something I'm very proud of with our team. They take this very seriously. They've made us do a number of things over the years with, we have double authentication to get into our computers, and it maybe is a little less convenient for some of us employees to do what we need to do, but they keep us safe because the biggest inconvenience, the disaster, would be not being able to access our systems at all. And so that's what this is a part of. We are collaborating with the state, federal, and other regional partners to make sure that we identify these attacks and events as they happen and continually update our defenses to make sure that we're kept safe from that. So it's a great partnership that we have. The state's throwing a lot of resources into it, and we are number one out of 62 counties in the state to be working with them.
All right. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dan Hoost. Who is the Sullivan County Communications Director, and he's telling us what's going on in Monticello with Sullivan County government. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Jeff Bank, Sullivan County's community bank, celebrating 110 years of service this year, offering deposit and loan products for all your banking needs. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender. National Mortgage Licensing System and Registry Identification Number 405318. Jeff Bank, still banking strong. And support comes from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Radio Catskills Spring Fund Drive is happening now. We're asking you to reflect on the value of this station as you consider your donation. No matter how you found Radio Catskill, no matter why you listen, you can be a part of the community that makes it possible by giving now at WJFFradio.org. And when you do, let us know how you discovered Radio Catskill and what it means to you. Make your donation now at WJFFradio.org.
Or call us at 845-482-4141. It's our spring fund drive. We're 37% of the way toward our goal, and we have just until April 20th to get there. It's a $55,000 goal. So if you can do some part of that, please help out. 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org. We can only exist with the generosity of our listeners. Your support helps us with our day-to-day operations to bring you local shows just like this one and all of the national shows and our locally produced shows as well, our music shows. 7 o'clock tonight, the mixtape kicks it off with our all locally produced lineup of programming. And if someone wants to sign up this hour as a new sound supporter, we have a thank you gift. You'll get two tickets to Beautiful, the Carole King musical at Forestburg Playhouse. That's coming this summer, July 30th through August 11th. Sign up at $10 a month or more as a new sound supporter. We'll give you those tickets. Or if you're already a sound supporter, just increase that monthly donation by $5 a month or more, and you'll get those tickets. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and we're speaking with Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government, who's filling us in on what's going on in Monticello. Dan, are you a Carole King fan?
I am. I'm thrilled to hear that because I always wanted to see it on Broadway, and then I missed out, and now I'll be able to see it locally.
Yeah,
so, that was great news.
Yes, Franklin Trapp was here earlier this week. He issued a challenge and also told us about this great lineup they have this summer at Forestburg Playhouse. So check that out.
He's here with me today, too, at the art summit that we're having at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance. Right, so I will talk to him personally.
I was going to ask you about that before we jump back into Sullivan County government stuff. The DVAA is having their art summit today, and that's why you're joining us by phone. Good to know that you're getting all the arts leaders in our area together to talk about the state of the arts, I guess.
It's really exciting to see. For those who don't know, I'm the board president of the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance, so that's why I'm in Narrowsburg today rather than at JFF and Liberty or over at the Government Center in Monticello. We have a great turnout of about 40 different representatives from our local arts and culture organizations, including some brand new ones that are just starting up. And it's been a pleasure to meet all these people, and it's exciting to hear what they have planned. And I'm really looking forward, since this is a whole day event, to the rest of the day when we have these breakout sessions where we talk about how to improve the arts in Sullivan County. That's the focus of the DVAA overall, and of course the individual focus of these organizations. And collaboration just will make us all stronger on that. So I'm thinking we will have some really interesting things to report, and you'll be hearing about them on JFF.
Yes, of course. Did you say 40 organizations?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that amazing? 40 organizations, and that's probably just the tip of the iceberg. There's such a great amount of wonderful arts and culture in our area, so it's great to hear that.
I think we are actually very much unique in that in terms of an upstate rural area,
How
much interest and support for the arts there are in the area.
And keep an eye on that Mimi Bradley from WJFF who's there on our behalf, too. Here she's a troublemaker.
We put her in a special corner where we monitor her minute by minute. So.
She might need a nap and a snack. All right. Let's get back to Sullivan County government. Your other hat, you're talking to us a little bit about some of the local fire leaders who've attended a firefighters conference recently. When was that, and what did they tell you when they came back?
Yeah, last month, actually, most of our fire coordinators, our deputy fire coordinator Tom Totten, our chief deputy fire coordinator Jack Halchek, our deputy fire coordinator Charlie Ramp, and our emergency services training coordinator Joe Moll joined 90 other fire coordinators and their deputies from across the state up at the Fire Academy that's in the Finger Lakes region in Montour Falls. And they listened to folks like the State Homeland Security and Emergency Services Commissioner Jackie Bray talk about how we're trying to attract and retain firefighters in New York State and Sullivan County in particular. It's not just about training. It's about the time that it takes. There looks like there's going to be monetary stipends for firefighters to take classes now. But more importantly than that is just the lessons that these coordinators learn and the connections that they make with their fellow coordinators. This is tough work that they do. They see some pretty hard and horrific things, and they need to be able to handle them in a professional manner when the rest of us probably would be hysterical. And they also, though, afterwards need that support from the folks who do the kind of work that they do to work through, you know, the physical and emotional and mental tolls that it takes. So this conference is crucially important. It's not just something where everyone gets together and listens to a few classes and departs. These people make lifelong connections that are really hugely important parts of their own health. So
they learned some valuable lessons too, from including an accident that had happened in Orange County last year when that band bus, I think, tipped over, went off the road on Interstate 84, and they there were some very important lessons that had to be learned from that. I remember reading about that in the media. So this was a great conference for them to attend, and they came back re-energized, which is what we want out of the folks who are leading our Bureau of Fire in Sullivan County.
And you're also trying to get some folks who are just getting started in emergency services area. There's a youth academy that's coming up. What's that about, and how can folks get involved?
Yeah, this is really interesting. It has had a huge impact or resonated with hundreds upon hundreds of people on social media, where we put it out just a few days ago. We are going to be doing an Emergency Services Youth Academy. This is a partnership between our Public Safety Division and our Youth Bureau for 14 to 16-year-olds who are interested in learning about emergency services in Sullivan County, whether it's fire or EMS or 911. It's an introduction to the various tools and techniques used in the field by police, EMS, fire professionals. There's going to be demonstrations and usage of our fire training tower, which is at our emergency services training facility near the county airport. This is something that we can set on fire. It actually doesn't burn down, but it simulates the kind of experiences that people would have if they were fighting a fire. We'll also have emergency vehicles. We'll have search and rescue demonstrations and a lot more. We are looking for any teenagers, again, 14 to 16 years old, who are Sullivan County residents, to join us for this. It'll run from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. July 22nd through the 26th. And you can find out more information by calling our public safety office. That's 845-807-0509. 807-0509. They'll be happy to sign up as many young folks as we can get, because these are going to be our future police officers, our future ambulance rig drivers, our future EMS technicians, our future firefighters.
Yeah. Also, some opportunities for young people. Seasonal jobs at the county are available. What are the types of jobs, and how can folks learn more about those?
Well, you have a number of different options. If you're, especially if you're in your teens, we have a summer youth employment program through our Youth Bureau and our Center for Workforce Development, where you can work with a team, like litter plucking or helping community gardens, that kind of thing. That's great, especially for young people who want to be with other young people and maybe work better within a group. But we also have seasonal positions at our parks, for example, lifeguards, and at our Lake Superior State Park, we also have people who need to take cash at the ticket booth when you come in to use the park. And these are your typical summer jobs. They can be a little bit hot and sweaty at times, but how did our parents put it? They build character. But we also pay you to do it. And we work it so that we're working around your school schedule, so that while some jobs are available as early as next month, others will start after high school lets out in late June. For lifeguards in particular, I'd like to mention that we are now offering the training and certification in-house, something we were never able to do before, but now we can. And we have an assistant parks director, her name's Fiona, who has her own lifeguard certification and can train others with it. So it's something where you don't have to figure out, okay, I want to be a lifeguard, but how do I train so that I can get a job with the county? We'll take care of it. All you need to do is go to find a job on our county website, sullivanny.us, or give a call to our Human Resources Department. That's 807-0485, 845-807-0485, and they can steer you accordingly and make sure that you've got a job that I actually think will be very interesting and a growth period for anybody who wants to take it. And it's not just for teenagers. We'll take young adults and even older adults for particular jobs. I always wanted to do the one that we're offering down at our Delaware and Hudson Canal Interpretive Center in Summitville, where we have a mini museum. And then outdoors, actually, we also have remnants of the canal. And you can guide people along that. That just sounds awesome to me. Something maybe I'll do in my retirement.
All right. And before we go, we have a special happy birthday to recognize.
Yes, I was privileged to be at Achieve Rehab and Nursing in Liberty yesterday, where legislators presented a certificate of recognition to Zita Speer. She's 103 years old as of yesterday, and her son, our county coroner, Michael Speer, and his family were there as well. So were all the residents, all the staff. She got a wonderful parade of law enforcement vehicles that came by. She was so grateful and happy for it. It actually... I was worried because they said, oh, she doesn't like birthday parties. But she was very moved by it. She kept saying thank you to everybody. I think this was just something that really made her day. And listen, after 103 birthdays, if we can still impress you, that's a great thing.
So I saw the photos on Facebook, and she's adorable, and she did look happy. So congratulations. Happy birthday to Zita, 103 years old. Dan Hoost is from Sullivan County Government. He is the communications director, joins us every Friday. He's joining us on the phone today because he's getting back to that DVAA Art Summit that's going on right now. Dan, thanks for taking the time out, and we'll talk with you soon.
Thanks, as always. Have a good weekend.
You too. A quick break for us, and when we come back, culture reporter Valerie Manzi is here with River Rep. This is Radio Chatskill.
Hi, I'm Brent Jones, senior news apps developer at NPR.
I'm Casey Morell, and I produce the NPR Politics podcast.
My name is Kristen Hartman. I'm the senior manager of business development at NPR.
I work in public media for a lot of reasons, but the main one is that first word, public. What we do is available to everyone, everywhere.
I started at NPR answering phones when listeners called. And I stay in public media because I'm just insatiably curious about what we can do and create when we all work together.
I've worked in public media for more than a decade because I believe it's important to help people understand the world around them, how we got here, what's happening now, where we're going, and why it matters to all of us.
Help keep public media strong today by making a donation to this station. Here's how, and thank you.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Or call us at 845-482-4141. I'm here with culture reporter Valerie Manzi. Hi.
Yes, and there's a big cultural event going on today that I heard you talking about.
Can you believe that? Over 40 organizations from arts and culture in our area.
I know that.
It's amazing. I mean, we have so... Well, you know you're the culture reporter.
Yes,
I have so many. We have so many. It's just so great to just hear that number. Like, we have such a richness of that in our area. And we are so happy to be able to shine a light on so many of them here at Radio Catskill, and you can help support that during our spring drive, 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. The organization we're talking about today is?
It is River Rep.
A new-ish, I guess, in the last year or so.
A couple of years.
Theater troupe. Here is your interview with the folks from River Rep.
Good morning, Chris, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Good morning, Valerie. Thank you so much for having us back here again.
So you have quite an event coming up this weekend. Can you share with our audience what we should expect?
We are very, very excited. Going now into our third year with River Rep Theater to be having our first annual gala benefit. And the gala is going to be on April 13, this Saturday, April 13, at 7 p.m. We're looking to make it a real celebration of our ensemble, our company, and our audience, like you and like all of the folks out there who have been supporting us these last couple of years. We're going to be previewing some material from our upcoming season. We're going to be showing off some new talents, some old talents, and making this a real opportunity for the community to get a sense of our coming season, and also for us to be able to experiment and play a little bit and bring some new voices and new talents to the stage.
And you have quite a number of performers scheduled for that night. Some are here.
17 performers altogether, including a flaming whip demonstration that Arthur is going to perhaps speak a little bit more about.
Arthur, let's go to you. I'm all ears.
Well, I don't know how much I should say. I don't know if
what volunteer fire departments are listening to this program. A friend of mine, Harrison Killian, who is an artist and an animator by trade, has also taken up the whip.
The whip. Woo.
And there will be a demonstration of his whipping techniques, and there may be
some fire.
But he will also, I've been told he's working on chopping a can in half with the whip. So it's cool stuff.
Okay, I'm ready. And next, who would you like to hear from next?
You know, Valerie, going into this new season, I'm also excited to say that we've officially launched our ensemble with 6 new members.
Wonderful.
And also, Arthur is now the Associate Artistic Director of River Rep.
Congratulations, Arthur.
Thank you.
We have 2 ensemble members with us today who I'm excited to turn the microphone over to, Lisa Gonsalves and Crystal Tweed, both of whom are going to be performing. And perhaps you guys could speak a little bit to your pieces, maybe, that we're going to be previewing at the gala on Saturday. Lisa's doing a very funny piece called A Heated Situation, which centers around a chip.
A chip. Okay.
Well, it's, you know, one of those heated chip challenges. And it's a very fun piece. I promise it will be funny, a bit surreal, and I think relevant to, you know, modern times. It's a, you know, a 10-minute original play where my husband challenges me. I don't know this. I eat this chip defiantly as if it's going to be fine. It's not exactly fine. We're not sure if he's trying to kill me. We're not sure if it's all in my mind. We're not sure if, you know, he's negatively manifesting the law of attraction on my behalf. We just don't know, but it will be fun to perform, and I believe it will be funny to watch.
Crystal is going to be doing 2 scenes at the benefit, which we're very excited to be sharing with the audience. The first is from a really wonderful play that is kind of lost and rediscovered called Trouble in Mind by a fantastic black female playwright named Alice Childress. This play never got done back in its day in the 1950s because it was challenging in a way that the producers tried to get her to change her play, but she refused. And it centers around a Broadway actress, a black Broadway actress who's trying to make it and who's trying to work within a system that's tough. And I want to punt over to Crystal. And after we can talk about the second piece that you're doing, but maybe share a little bit about your character and about Trouble in Mind.
Thank you, Chris. So my character, Trouble in Mind, as Chris had mentioned, is a Broadway actress, and she is trying to instill to this young man who is coming up, and he also wants to be an actor, and he is bright-eyed, and he's coming in like he can take on the world. And so she's not trying to dim his light, but she's giving him the reality of what it's like to be an actor, actress of color coming up in those times. And I love this piece, not only because it's an amazing piece. As soon as I read it, I wanted to do it. But the young man, Frank DeGroat, who is playing opposite me, I also played opposite Frank in, I don't know, maybe about 10, 11 years ago with Oliver King, who directed the play. And it was A Raisin in the Sun. And he played my son in that play. So this was about 10 or 11 years ago. He is now in his 20s. So I'm really excited to play opposite him again for this production.
How wonderful.
Yes,
yes, that's a nice story.
He's all grown up. He's all grown up now.
And the other piece?
Arthur, would you like to maybe speak a little bit to the second piece that you're going to be sharing with Crystal?
Sure. Crystal and I will be doing a scene from The Prisoner of Second Avenue by Neil Simon.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. We talk a lot about what plays we want to produce, and Chris tends towards the Brecht and the
and the heavy duty stuff,
the heavier stuff, and I kind of like the lighter comedic stuff. So we're a good combination in that sense. I think we
complement
each other. Thank you. Anyway, I've always loved this play, having lived in New York for 25 years and finally escaped to Monticello. This play means a lot to me, it's
fun.
funny play, and Crystal and I are having fun working on it.
Mm-hmm. We're also going to be doing some other really terrific stuff, Valerie, at the benefit. When, you know, we want this evening to be a lot of fun. Part of that's going to be a silent auction that we're going to be having that we're really excited to share. We have paintings from some terrific local artists, including Bobby Oliver and some other local artists who
Wonderful.
Have donated. Yes. Who've donated their pieces with us. So we're going to have that silent auction. We're going to be having, at the end of the evening, well, I wanted to also make sure and mention Kasri Jackson. So in addition to about a half dozen scenes from various plays, some of which will be part of our 2024 season, the evening is going to end with a terrific performance from Kasri Jackson doing some solo jazz piano.
Always a treat.
Exactly. And actually, Kasri is going to be doing original score for our June production of Yasmin Oreyes' play Art, which is a sort of pitch forward. And I want to mention that as well. So we're excited to have her a part of the benefit, and we're excited that she's going to be doing some original music for our June production as well. And what else can we share?
I think it's important to say that half a dozen to a dozen local restaurants have donated dishes.
Food.
So we'll have
delicious
buffet of.
We want everyone to eat, drink,
and
watch,
be merry.
Make merry. Art is good. Art is healing. Art brings us together. And I have to say, from a tiny little idea, this has blossomed into a big evening that we're so excited to share. There's going to be so much talent up on that stage, Valerie. And we're very grateful to you for helping us get the word out.
Can you give our audience the details?
It will be this Saturday, April 13th, 7 o'clock. It is what was formerly the Nutshell Space in Lake Huntington. It's the Delaware Valley Opera location. And we look forward to seeing everyone there.
And they can get tickets online?
MyRiverTickets.com.
Okay.
If you go into MyRiverTickets.com, you will see the event on their homepage.
Great.
The tickets are, and yes, again, it's at the Delaware Valley Opera Center in beautiful Lake Huntington. Please come hang out on the porch, eat, drink, watch great art, and dance with us. Dance action on the floor, Valerie.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing this with us.
Culture reporter Valerie Manzi with Chris Perdido and the folks from River Rep.
Yes, sounds like a fun evening.
Yeah.
And you learned all about it here on your local radio station,
so
WJFF Radio Catskill. I didn't say Chatskill.
We're on Chatskill, but this is Catskill. Anyway, it supports it all. 845-482-4141 or WJFFradio.org. Our intrepid culture reporter, Valerie Manzi, out there bringing you the arts and culture in our community.
Yes, yes, yes.
So we can let you all know what's going on with all of the great arts and culture that we are so, so blessed to have in our area. I mean, it's just really great to know that that's right outside your door.
Yep. And it's a lot of hardworking people.
Oh, yeah.
That it's a labor of love. Like many of us here at WJFF.
Yeah, so support that.
Yeah, I mean, support all of us in your local community, giving, giving, giving to make this community a vibrant and exciting and a place where you can come to WJFF for culture, for news, for weather, for local news.
Local music as well, yeah.
Oh, we've got some wonderful new programming from young folks that are delving into other genres and areas that we're very excited about.
Those whippersnappers. We're going to go call us at 845-482-4141 or go to WJFFradio.org. We've got some more news coming up from On Point at WBUR in Boston, which is a great show. And want to make sure we tell people about the weather because rain continuing this afternoon, high near 60, but then temperatures dropping down to 37, not going that much higher tomorrow, only a high around 39-40. And they're using the S word, snow maybe mixing in with rain showers overnight and in the morning. Okay, happy spring. I should use that word, happy spring.
Yeah, spring. It'll
we'll get through it. We'll get through it. Just listen to WJFF Radio Catskill, WJFF Jeffersonville, W233 AH Monticello. It's 11 o'clock.